This is the Paula Gordon Show. We are very pleased indeed to be with Amory Lovins in Snowmass, Colorado. Bill Russell?
I have the luxury of having a degree in engineering. And for a long time, I mean, there's some very profound things in what you write and what you say and what you've done. We have, for a long time, and particularly in technologies, but really in the world at large, tended to specialize and to become better and better and better at very smaller and smaller pieces. And your argument seems to be to come across all of that, to step back and look at its systems design, to look at the entire undertaking, the entire process, what it is you're trying to accomplish, rather than engineer and perhaps even over-engineer the separate systems.
Well, and the best engineering may be to get rid of the parts you don't really need. Quite a lot of the time,
which is hard
in our industrial practice, I just ask now, why are we doing this? Do we need to do this?
Well, we've always done it that way, at least for the last 20 years.
Yeah. Well,
did you finish your thought about how the engineering processes can be put to better effect?
Well, you see, if you say taking this building, if you optimize the insulation by itself as a component, you're pessimizing the house as a system. When you optimize the whole house, you pay, for example, more for the windows, nothing for the furnace that's not there. The whole house ends up getting cheaper, and it works a lot better. So this is an example, and there are many, many others we've demonstrated across a wide range of technical systems, of how you do what we call tunneling through the cost barrier, where you make very big savings of energy and resources cost less than small or no savings.
Which is counterintuitive to most of us.
Well, it's counter to the economic theory of diminishing returns. It's instead expanding returns. But it shouldn't be contrary to all of our experience, because consumer electronics, for example, are always getting smaller, better, faster, cheaper. Why shouldn't energy and resource savings do that too? And they do if you design them properly. One of my favorite examples is the factory where they had to move some fluid around in a circle to transfer heat. It's called a pumping loop. And a top engineering firm optimized it to use 71 kilowatts of pumping power, and after redesign it used 5.
It was 92%
or factor 12 reduction, but it worked better and it cost less to build. And again, it was just simple changes in design mentality, no changes in technology. So we ended up with fat, short, straight pipes instead of skinny, long, crooked pipes. And this is an archetype. If we get whole system optimization right in how we design the things that use energy and resources, we'll get about 3 to 10 times more efficient, and they'll work better, and they'll cost less.
There's a tendency in existing systems to adopt either a static perspective or to adopt an incremental perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And you're arguing for, with compelling evidence, for at least occasionally stepping back outside of those loops, and instead of looking at incremental solutions or static solutions, go back and ask the core questions of why are we in this swamp? What are we here to do? What's this house supposed to do? What's this building supposed to do? What's this automobile supposed to do? What is this energy supposed to do? Is that a fair characterization?
Absolutely, and it's a lot more fun. It's really why you became an engineer in the first place.
Mm-hmm. You want to solve problems, not to repeat mistakes.
Yes, no,
right?
no infectious hepatitis. You aren't just allowed to copy the last set of drawings.
Infectious repetitis.
That's
perhaps I'll remember
colleague.
That. As I read Natural Capitalism, I was stunned by how many examples you could bring to your presentation.
No,
I'm not going to say argument.
You should have seen all the ones on the cutting room floor.
Well, exactly. And I think that most of us don't have a sense of just how much great stuff is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a magnet for the good stuff? How is it that you knew it and I didn't?
Well, you know, I'm working in a group of 50 practitioners here, and I'm thinly spread over about 50 countries, so we have a pretty wide network, and collectively we hear of a lot of great design examples. We're interested in the ones that actually work, and most of them come from the private sector. That's where we put most of our effort, because uniquely it has the resources, leadership, management, skill, speed, innovation, integration, execution, all that it takes to solve big problems in a hurry. So we also felt that if we if we help real companies solve real problems and we pick the right companies that are ripe for it and admired or feared by their competitors and would get a lot of attention, we could spread the practice of natural capitalism a lot faster through competitive forces. That is, we could help some companies do so well with it that their success would force their rivals to follow suit or lose market share. That seems to be working very well.
That only modestly conniving of you, doesn't that work within the system to make the system work?
Uh-huh. Well, markets are very good at what they do, and we've developed a lot of ways to use them creatively to help get out of this mess. And natural capitalism is actually a book for business leaders. I think many environmentalists will read it, but that wasn't our primary audience. Paul Hawken, Hutter Lovins, and I felt that the business leaders are the ones that can save the world fastest, in a way, and make money on the deal. So, indeed, this is part of a broad movement we see. It's kind of a cultural revolution among business leaders. And it's spread very rapidly. You know, the Chinese edition sells out on the second or third day of every printing.
Step us through the basic premises, since we're at natural capitalism.
Well, you might first wonder about the title. Capitalism is supposed to be the productive use of and reinvestment in capital. But what's capital? Well, industrial capitalism deals seriously only with two kinds of capital, namely money and goods, financial and physical capital. But there are at least two other important kinds. In fact, they're even more valuable, namely people and nature. Without people, there's no economy. Without nature, there are no people and no life and nothing happens. So liquidating those two kinds of assets and not valuing them really flies in the face of economic logic. That's why at the moment we have, if you like, unnatural capitalism that's a temporary aberration because it's not following its own logic. So in natural capitalism, you play with a full deck, all four kinds of capital, and you make more money and have more fun that way. You do this by following four operational principles that any business can apply Monday morning. The first is to use resources with radically greater productivity. In the first industrial revolution, there was a relative scarcity of people that was limiting progress in exploiting seemingly boundless nature. Today, we've got abundant people and scarce nature. It's the other way around. So now it's not people but nature we need to be using 10 or 100 times more productively, wringing far more work out of the energy, materials, water, topsoil, and so on that we borrow from the planet. And that's very profitable. Second, we need to change production to biological designs that have closed loops, no waste, and no toxicity. Third, there's a new business model, Jim Womack calls it the solutions economy, that actually rewards those two kinds of changes, ensuring that both the provider and the customer get paid for the same thing. They both make money by doing more and better with less for longer. Fourth, what do you do with the profits? Well, any prudent capitalist knows to reinvest them productively into capital. That's why it's called capitalism. Right. And typically, the most productive kind of capital to invest in is the kind you're shortest of, in this case, nature. Well, those four principles all reinforce each other, and together they give stunning competitive advantage. They give you happier, more motivated, more creative and effective people in the organization, happier customers. Everybody comes out ahead.
There is a kind of, I can't remember the name of it, there's a Asian, like judo, like jujitsu. That is jujitsu, isn't it?
It depends on what you're talking about.
I could let you in on that, couldn't I?
Aikido?
It is that notion of you use the same kind of force, but instead of being a blunt instrument against a wall, that you're putting the force to the solution rather than just stopping yourself with your old ways of doing business, isn't it?
You may be thinking of a vigorous but, in a sense, nonviolent martial art called Aikido.
There we go.
Yeah, which is a blending of energies. So if you were to come rushing at me to attack me, I could try to stay rigidly fixed in my position and hope you'd bounce off. Mm. Or I can kind of embrace you, turn around the way you're going, and help you along the way you're going, harmlessly past me. So that's the Aikido way. And in Aikido politics, therefore, you don't fight with an opponent. You dance with a partner.
Yeah.
You honor other people's beliefs as you would your own, even if you think they're wrong. You're committed to process, not outcome, in the belief that from a good process will come a better outcome than anyone had in mind in the first place. And then your responsibility is just to make sure that whoever needs to take credit for that outcome will do so, whether they deserve it or not. And it's a very effective way to deal with most kinds of conflict. You know, in the Tao Te Ching, there's a remark about water, that which is of all things most yielding can overcome that which is most hard is a fact known by all but used by none. Being substanceless, it can enter in even where there are no cracks. So Aikido politics is, in a way, the politics of water. It works very well, and we try to get better at it.
This is Amory Lovins, and once again, when we come back, Bill Russell will have a chance to ask the question that is looming. I am Paula Gordon. We are pleased to be in Snowmass, Colorado at Rocky Mountain Institute. We'll all be back in just a moment. Please be with us.